Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
Real Madrid, finale del partido, el centro vino.
This is Rog, and you are listening to European Nights, presented by Paramount Plus, the podcast that's slowly just becoming a vehicle celebrating Spanish radio hosts who lose their effing minds. And I've got to say, this is a bittersweet episode. We have reached the final stages of our beloved competitions. You may think of them as competitions. I think of them as friends. We have reached the final stage of our beloved friends, meaning we only have three glorious titular European nights remaining. The stage is set. We know our cast in the Conference League. Two of the kings of retro football shirt Pinterest boards face off, Feyenoord and Roma in the Europa League. We've been gifted a clash of pure footballing bloodlines, what Americans would call storied franchises. German Hatfields versus Scottish McCoys, Eintracht Frankfurt versus Glasgow Rangers, and of course, in the Champions League, a heavyweight rumble with a bit of history. Liverpool Real Madrid 2, Electric Boogaloo, a game propelled by Wheels Within Wheels storylines after the almost religious semi-final scenes in Madrid. And I must say, St. Carlo has a very nice ring to it. And we will reflect on all of this in this podcast with the help of my always guest, Rory Smith, chief soccer correspondent for the New York Times. Rory, you're at the hard hat zone, known as the Bernabeu. Simple question. Was it the most dramatic combination to a game you've ever seen live with thine own eyes?
I really want to say yes for the sake of good audio content, but the actual answer is no. The answer is only no because I was at Barcelona 6, PSG 1. And that included three goals in the last 7 minutes. And just in terms of pure number of goals, that has to take it.
Can I introduce you to a very important part of this podcast? It's called recency bias.
No, so the I would say this is the kind of company it keeps. It was more dramatic than Liverpool 4, Barcelona 0, because that peaked too early. That was, I think, the corner taken quickly goal was in the 69th, 70th minute, something like that. So there was still a sort of time for something else to happen. You didn't know if it was the end. The Barca-PSG game is the single greatest sporting event I've ever been at. But Real Madrid 3, Man City 1 take second place just because I remember looking up at the clock in the Bernabeu and it said 89:31. And I thought, I should probably come up with an intro now. I should think of something to write. Otherwise, I'm going to get shouted at, which is how I motivate myself. That's very, people ask about my process occasionally. My process is wait till the last minute, think you're going to get in trouble, then do something. And I thought, okay, this is done. This, you know, there's no way back. And then Rodrigo gets a goal and you think, well, at least Real Madrid haven't lost at home. At least there's a bit of hope. At least I don't have to think of a lead straight away. I better hang on. And then for them to go and score again straight away, the next attack, generally in a press box, you have to retain a degree of etiquette. You've got to be neutral, can't show affiliations, and you don't want to show too much emotion. You don't want to look like a rube. everyone in the press box in the Bernabeu looked like a total rube that night, because when that header goes in, you just, it was totally overwhelming. It was an involuntary spasm of noise. It was extraordinary. It was very Real Madrid.
Real Madrid, official team for Spanish royals and procrastinating journos everywhere. And I did love the way you described the atmosphere in those beautiful, poetic, epic moments in your piece for the New York Times. You wrote, the way it awoke itself from the end of game purgatory, whipped into an Eleusinian frenzy. Real Madrid's incredible self-belief, dazzling crowd and opponent alike, their journey through the knockout rounds. I mean, how can you even explain it? A comeback against PSG, late goals to force extra time against Chelsea and City, each game seeing a toothy smile emerge from the depths of Karim Benzema's beard after forcing you and your journalistic counterparts to tear up the opening paragraphs of your game notes. How do you understand it?
I don't think you can. I think there comes a point where you believe that football is about system and it's about ideas and it's about technique and data and all of these tangible things. There are times when the only thing you can do is kind of what the ancients did and look at something they didn't understand and assume it's magic. That's the only thing you can do, because Real Madrid had no right to even still be in that game.
I love your analysis that what Carlo has created, this magical confection, we are watching it in the same way as the ancients must have felt when they first saw fire or the whale. Oh, that is Real Madrid football. And that's why the Champions League this year has demanded the world's attention. And Rory, we have to talk about one person in particular whose attention it's grabbed, no less a man than Ralf Nader, Rory Smith. Let me assure you, you have many fans here in the United States of America, but Nader, the political activist, appears to despise you even more than he does unregulated auto industries and free market capitalism. Last Thursday, if you didn't see this, dear listeners, he tweeted, "The NY Times sports page thinks its readers are more interested by far in Real Madrid than in the real Yankees." See, he played off Real and real Yankees. "In Real Madrid than the real Yankees in New York City. Yankees and Mets baseball games are almost invisible." Damn, my Ralf Nader impression's quite good. "Not even the scores are printed in the Times Suburban Sports Edition anymore. Go figure." Let's be real. Real Yankees or Real Yankees. It's just Nader's just trying to insert himself in the US soccer Twitter argument about whether American clubs can use European naming templates. Mets United FC surely up next. But Rory, as possibly the most direct source of all of Ralf's rage tweets, can you tell us, in your season covering the Champions League for the Times, what's your experience of how the Times' audience's engagement with the footballing audience has changed?
Well, there's a lot more Ralf Nader engagement at the moment, to be honest. it's quite flattering to think that Ralf Nader is kind of, I mean, he's not reading the stuff that we write, obviously. He clearly hates football, but it's really nice to think that, like, Ralf Nader's like opening his paper and thinking, "Oh my God, there's more football." Just in a way, that's acknowledgement of our work. It makes me really happy. I'm sorry that Ralf's upset. I don't want him to be upset, but maybe if he got into it, he'd be happy. I think the Real Madrid phenomenon is probably the word this season is the sort of thing that, like you say, captures people's attention. It is just a great sporting story. They have, whether you have any interest in the sport or not, those have been inherently dramatic nights. Just, it's not, there's a point where sport crosses over into drama and all humans are interested in drama. And I think it's really, it would be weird not to be enthralled in some way by this incredibly unlikely stuff happening. In terms of producing those dramatic moments, those things that you can't tear your eyes away from, the Champions League is unrivaled. And this season has been, even by the Champions League standards, pretty special.
God bless you, Ralf Nader, you last American football holdout dinosaur. Rog, Rory and Ralf coming next season on Real European Nights. And we'll spare Mr. Nader more Real Madrid talk for today. We'll talk at length about the Champions League final next week. But today, we got a heaping, steaming plate of Europa League with an extra helping of Conference League to tuck into. Footy scran. As a reminder, You can catch every single one of these finals live and on demand exclusively on Paramount Plus. And new subscribers, you can get a 7-day free trial now by going to paramountplus.com/MIB.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer. Streaming the best teams and biggest stars from around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League.
A Messi tour de force.
Serie A, NWSL, and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
From the set, there is it.
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my word, what a goal.
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount Plus.
There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Oh, that is beautiful. That was the Glasgow Rangers' faithful chant for cult hero in the making, the score of the dramatic 80th minute winner in the Europa League semi-final and vital utility man John Lundstrom, based on one of my favourite Belinda Carlisle hits of all time, 1987's Heaven is a Place on Earth. And if you're a Rangers fan or Rory Smith, that place is Scotland. Shall we Europa League, Rory?
Let's do it.
We have our finalists, legendary Scottish outfit Glasgow Rangers, who mounted a comeback win, an astonishingly glorious night to shock RB Leipzig, winning 3-1 to pull off a 3-2 win on aggregate in scenes of passion and delirium in that bear pit of Ibrox, which we cannot overstate is just an incredible result against what Brendan Rodgers would call a top team. And they will take on Eintracht Frankfurt, the Eagles, the Adler, last seen making David Moyes' eyes bulge in fury as they off West Ham. Oh, rip West Ham. Setting up a wonderful final between two European football's truly deep-rooted historic sides. Certainly one of the most unique finals we've had in the competition in a bloody long time. Marks only the second time since the UEFA Cup became the Europa League in 2009 that the final has not been contested by either an English or a Spanish team. The other outlier being 2011 all Portuguese affair between Braga and Porto. And over the last decade, this competition has become something of a backdoor route into the Champions League for giants like Atletico Madrid in 2012, Chelsea in 2019. They offer meat and arm to the teeth Spanish welterweight side like a Sevilla or a Villarreal, aka wherever Unai Emery is managing. Rory, this final, such a curiosity, such a welcome oddity, but it is a departure from the Europa League norms. In your opinion, is it a sea change in this competition, or is it just an aberration?
Probably more the latter than the former, I think. You're right. Like this competition in the last 10 years in particular has generally gone to a team probably that's fallen out of the Champions League, or a team that could well be in contention to qualify for it through the domestic route, the traditional domestic route, rather than Rangers, who were a power, obviously, in Scotland in a minor league, relatively minor league, I should be respectful, and Eintracht Frankfurt, who are mid-table in Germany, although their position is, as we've, I think we've said before, is warped a little bit by the fact that they have clearly stopped trying in the Bundesliga since the prospect of winning the Europa League suddenly appeared on their radar. Whether it sets a precedent for something that might come, I'm not so sure. Generally, the Europa League is skewed by the fact that halfway through, a load of teams come out of the Champions League and are immediately better than pretty much everybody else who was left in it. I guess what's made the difference this year is that two of the teams that you maybe would have expected to win the Europa League by dropping out of the Champions League drew each other, Barcelona and Napoli. Which I think might have been our first ever episode, to be honest. I think we might have done that in our first.
I'm feeling
nostalgic. Yeah, so Barca and Napoli get each other, which removes one main contender from the field straight away. And then, of course, Barcelona then go and get knocked out in that weird slump that they had around the time that they also beat Real Madrid, potential European champions, 4-0 at home by Eintracht Frankfurt. That then accounts for Barcelona. So you've kind of had a particularly open field this year. There hasn't been anyone come out of the Champions League who has looked like a really strong contender, to an obvious choice, as, to be honest, Atletico Madrid and eventually Sevilla always were. Once they were in the Europa League, you kind of felt, okay, this is probably, they're one of the finalists. And so you do get this final that's really fresh, and I think that's incredibly important for all European competitions, but particularly for the Europa League. Because I think this with the FA Cup all the time. What matters for competitions that run the risk of being regarded as like a consolation prize or a second-rate trophy is that they are won by people for whom they are incredibly meaningful. And you saw that with the FA Cup last year, that Leicester City winning the FA Cup for the first time in their history. It kind of restored a little bit of the luster. And we talk about the FA Cup losing its luster far too much. People actually do a lot more criticism of people criticising the FA Cup than actually criticise it. But seeing Leicester win it and seeing how much it meant was really, really significant. And I think it reminded people a little bit, actually, this is a tournament that's worth winning. And that will definitely be the case for whoever wins out of Rangers and Eintracht Frankfurt, because there will be, either in Glasgow or in Frankfurt, a fairly substantial party come Wednesday night.
Tournament of bracket busters. So we have to focus on Rangers. In our second episode, we began to talk about what it would mean for this club to be back at this level, really competing in a European final. But we didn't really dwell on the beginning of their modern journey and just how low it was 10 years ago, 2012. Financial insolvency of the ownership led to liquidation of the club, essentially bankruptcy. And the Rangers Football Club was sold to a new firm who registered it under the wholly new corporation, the Rangers Football Club Limited. And so the club was forced to start over again, humiliatingly, in the Scottish Third Division. I mean, this was the bowels. This was Promethean, one of the old deities of European football, who brought us so much joy and spectacle, were cast from paradise, banished, and fans of a team who'd seen an almost Galactico-style procession of football's greatest stars at Ibrox in the 80s and 90s were forced to reckon with the knowledge that had been underwritten by, shall we say, shady financing. It was all an agony. It was even an agony for neutrals, and the intensity of the pain, it's partially why this appearance as a Europa League finalist has been celebrated by the entire world of football. And you told the story of your trip to Scotland's lower leagues to watch Rangers play Brechin City when we talked about them, a stadium where one of the stands is actually just a hedge. Rory, you, much like me, have a great love for Scotland and the Scottish people. You were just on vacation there with the entire Smith clan. Can you put into words why we've seen the football world beaming with pride at Rangers on this pedestal once again?
I think partly it's the fame of the name. There is an enduring respect for both Rangers and Celtic amongst fans in general. I think there is an awareness that they are two enormous clubs.
Proper football.
Well, yeah, and I'm a little bit biased because of my enduring love for Scotland and the Scots. But I get annoyed by that debate about, you know, would Rangers and Celtic be able to survive in the Premier League? Now, if you parachuted them both in right now with these teams, they'd probably struggle against relegation, both of them. Celtic might finish mid-table, but, you know, they wouldn't be in a position to win it. Give them 10 years with Premier League money and those two stadiums and all that history, they'd both be contenders to win the Premier League. There are a couple of clubs in Britain bigger than Celtic and Rangers, but there's not more than a couple. That gets forgotten far too easily. So I think there's a bit of that. There's a little bit of kind of pleasure at seeing just an underdog from an underdog lead. You know, as much as Rangers are huge in Scotland, their financial power compared to even to RB Leipzig is nothing. They don't have, not only do they not have a soft drinks empire behind them, they don't have access to Bundesliga TV revenues, they don't have access to the kind of salaries that they can pay. There is a charm, I think, it's a particular type of charm to the team, which is quite a lot of championship second tier journeymen from England or players who've struggled to find a home. There's a slight kind of scrappy quality to Rangers that's important. But the main thing, I think, is it's a representative of the rest of the continent, the rest of European football in a major final. And we don't see that enough in general. We'll touch on this, I'm sure, with Feyenoord as well. But lots and lots of countries have been locked out of making major finals in the last 10, 15, 20 years. You'll occasionally get a Portuguese entrant, just the Portuguese, the big three in particular, kind of punch way above their weight. Ajax have come close. And that's basically it. Nobody else, you know, Olympiacos aren't going to make a final. Or even a Marseille. You know, a lot of those teams have not been in a position to get close to a European final for a long time. And I think Rangers being there is a reminder that there are big historical clubs from outside the major five leagues. And that's something that improves the tapestry of football. And I think people respond quite well to that, except for Celtic fans.
You mentioned Celtic, Rory, and you joked on a previous episode that with Celtic winning the league and Rangers possibly, and I don't want to curse it, also winning a European Cup, it could be the first time ever that all of Glasgow is technically happy. If Rangers beat Frankfurt, big if, Scotland would hold two Champions League spots. Is Scotland in danger of that influx of cash into just two clubs, making Celtic and Rangers untouchable heavyweights, financially outgunning your Hibernians, your St Mirrens? Is that an accomplishment for Scottish football as a monolith, or is it a bit of a looming leviathan?
It's both. So for Scotland, in one sense, to have Rangers and Celtic in the Champions League group stages automatically. So Celtic qualify as champions automatically for the group stage because of Russia's ban. So the slot that would have gone to the Russian champions will now go to the next lead down, which is Scotland. So that would be Celtic in the group stage, no need to qualify. Rangers would qualify as Europa League winners. And not only would they qualify, they'd be seeded. So that would, in theory, it doesn't quite work like that necessarily, but in theory, that should make it slightly easier for them to reach the knockout stages, which, again, you're then getting access to huge pots of cash. And in terms of prestige, I think that would be amazing for Scottish football. It's really hard to say anything other than that. In Rangers' case in particular, it would help solidify the finances. It would help them attract a higher calibre of player. It would help them grow to a team that could compete more regularly with Celtic. And the thing that I think maybe gets forgotten a little bit about Rangers and Celtic, but particularly Rangers. So we might just about remember the Celtic team that made the Europa League UEFA Cup final in 2003 that lost in Seville to FC Porto, coached by a charming salt and pepper haired young Lothario called Jose Mourinho.
Back in his humble days.
I think we forget a little bit quite how good the Rangers team just before that was. Brian Laudrup played for Rangers. Gazza played for Rangers in that kind of mid to late 90s, early 2000s period when they were paying massive money. Rangers were an all-star Galactico team. They were Muck Galacticos, which, if that had been a thing at the time, is what they would have been called. And it is possible, just about, that if you have two teams in the Champions League group stages, that starts to create a kind of a self-fulfilling cycle, a repeating cycle, where they have access to better players, which means that they get back into the Champions League group stage more frequently, which means they have better access to better players, which means they get stronger and stronger. And I don't think we'll ever see the case that you've got like five current members of the Dutch national team playing for Rangers. But there is a scenario in which this kickstarts a bit of a return to what Celtic and Rangers were. The flip side to that is that Scotland's always been a duopoly. No one else is going to win the title. There is no hope of anyone dislodging both Celtic and Rangers in one season, because if Rangers are crap for a year, then Celtic win the lead, and if Celtic are crap for a year, Rangers win the lead. but it does run the risk of creating a scenario where Rangers and Celtic are just smashing everybody. There is no hope for Hearts or for Hibs or for Aberdeen. I do genuinely believe this is the big threat facing European football. This is really important. Then something has to be done to protect competitive balance, because otherwise domestic leagues will wither and die. And as much as the Champions League is brilliant drama and we love it, and even the Europa League can produce those sorts of occasions, that's not enough to sustain the game. And there is a chance that Scotland now becomes a test case for that.
Rangers play out their first European final since 2008. They face Eintracht Frankfurt Wednesday, May 18th at 3 p.m. Eastern, available to stream live and on demand on Paramount+. Next up, we're flipping the switch from Europa League to Conference League mode after a quick break.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer.
Oh, magnificent!
Streaming the best teams and biggest stars from around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League.
A Messi tour de force!
Serie A, NWSL, and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
To the sea!
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my word, what a goal!
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports, streaming on Paramount+.
It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long-time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites, in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. Roma, beautiful Roma, I painted you yellow like the sun, red like my heart. Oh, don't let anyone tell you that Italians aren't dramatic. Oh, Madonna, as Paulie Walnuts would say. Roma dispatched Brodgers Leicester City 1-0 in their semi-final second leg for a 2-1 aggregate win. That means they meet Dutch high-flying, caution to the wind, Feyenoord in the final. And that Feyenoord fan you interviewed about the magic of the European Conference League because of all the odd places it has taken him, let me just say, his journey's continuing all the way to Tirana, capital of Albania, known for its colourful pastel architecture, a pastiche of Ottoman, Soviet and fascist construction that now looks kind of like a Wes Anderson set. Rory, that's where the final would be. UEFA going glam for the first showcase of this competition, and this pairing, it's a proper throwback. Roma, their first European final in 32 years. Feyenoord in their first in 20, which means both have a true desire to lift this trophy and validate their odysseys. It's really part of the beauty of this competition that we've discussed. And while UEFA are no doubt sure to look at this success and immediately introduce 2 to 3 more competitions below the Conference League, like Russian nesting dolls, the Matryoshka Leagues, we do have something to savour in this clash. Just look at what it means to Jose Mourinho, the Larry David of European football cynics, who broke down in tears at the final whistle, saying this.
I shed a tear because my emotion was for everyone that loves this club. This is a giant club without the trophy room in relation to the social dimension of the club. I know what it means for them, and my emotion was for them.
Rory, this is the man who famously said he didn't want to even be a Europa League coach, but has embraced this conference journey with Roma wholeheartedly. We haven't discussed him much, but he could be the first coach to win the Champions League, the Europa League, and the Conference League. And when you look at Jose Mourinho these days, do you see a reflection of Roma in him just a little bit? An institution you described to me once as an unfulfilled giant?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. There's a slightly faded element to Mourinho. And we should always remember, it's Jose. So all of it is not put on, but it's all exaggerated for effect, isn't it? So yeah, of course he's crying because he's made the Europa Conference League final, but he wouldn't be, you know, if that was some other coach, he wouldn't be like, oh my God, I'm really jealous of that guy making the Europa Conference League final. He would say, it's ridiculous, it doesn't matter, what a stupid tournament, it shouldn't get upset. Like, love or hate Mourinho, for a long time, he did give the impression that if he wasn't winning immediately, he wasn't really interested. And I think one of the things that's held him back a little bit in the last 5, 6, 7 years, this stage of his career, is he hasn't really been willing to engage in a project. And ultimately, when you're not the man who is the first port of call for whichever major giant happens to be without a manager every summer, I think you have to take on a project and you have to be willing to commit. And that means building through the stages, indulging or entertaining a competition that maybe you feel is a little bit beneath you. And I think for the first time, really, Mourinho at Roma seems to have been prepared to do that. And that suggests to me that he's kind of in it now. Like he's bought into what he's there to do. He understands that turning Roma into what he wants them to be, into what he believes he should be coaching, will take 2 or 3 years. And I think he's previously maybe not quite had the patience for that. Certainly didn't at Tottenham. And it's interesting that Roma has won him over. It's not hard to see why, because, you know, this is a team, as you say, that has been to a European Cup final. It is, I don't quite know how to express this, but it's kind of the biggest club with the fewest titles in Europe. Roma feel like a giant. It feels like a superpower. It feels like one of those famous names. It's Gabriel Batistuta. It's Alisson. It's, you know, it's Vincenzo Montella, it's Francesco Totti, it's Daniele De Rossi, it's
Mo Salah.
Mo Salah, it's all this litany of famous players, but Roma have got, I think, and it is possible that this is one or two out, 3 Italian championships. That's not very many. Roma, you know, in a lot of measures, are not a superpower, but they feel like one. And I think there is that sense at Roma in particular, and it's probably true to an extent of Lazio, their city rivals, but Roma in particular, there is that sense that if someone gets it right there, if someone makes it work, that Roma is the other force. It's the great sleeping giant of European football. And I think Mourinho for a long time would have thought that Roma was maybe not rich enough or not powerful enough or not likely to win immediately enough to attract his attention. He's obviously recognised the need to drop down a level to that second tier of clubs to rebuild his reputation, to find gainful employment. And I think that he feels now that if he gets it right, if he sticks with it, he gets to turn Roma into something, even if it's just for a little while, for the first time in 20 years. And that would be an incredible achievement. To win a Serie A title with Roma would be vast. To win the Europa League with Roma would be enormous. And I think he sees that there is something there that he can create.
Listening to you make Roma sound like the New York Knicks. You win there, instant legend. You own the city, in Mourinho's case, in a way that really, in his imagination, Nero only ever has before. Although also in your description, you make Mourinho sound like he's experiencing the Ralph Nader years. And I do remember when Jose Mourinho was appointed at Roma, May 2021, and the fans welcomed him by unfurling a mural of Jose riding a Vespa ever so chicly. I do remember tweeting that within 3 seasons, Jose was guaranteed to have left that Vespa smashed up and wrapped around some lamppost somewhere. We will see the team standing between Jose and the vaunted UEFA Triple Crown, the great Feyenoord, founded in Rotterdam in 1908, a team who experienced a marvellous period in the 1960s, winning a fistful of European trophies and Eredivisie titles. Their most recent European success, the 2002 UEFA Cup, which makes them the only Dutch team to have won a European trophy in the 21st century. Players that have walked their halls are legends Ruud Gullit, Ronald Koeman, even current Rangers manager Gio van Bronckhorst. We've said time and time again, as this tournament has progressed, it's been the stealth joy of the season, even as UEFA's boardroom continues to sign off on ever more pernicious changes to the Champions League in the interest of new hegemony. These competitions seem to run counter to that sentiment, allowing the superpowers of pre-globalised football to dance once again on a global stage. And you wrote about the idea that the Conference League is not, quote, a major cup. You said on Twitter, all of these tournaments are as major as we want them to be. None of them have inherent meaning. Fans and players and managers imbue them with meaning. Rory, with the ability to look back on the entirety of the Conference League's first season in existence, how do you view the old contradiction of Europe's historical elite finding new meaning in UEFA's least historical competition?
Well, I think in one sense it's a bit of a shame that we have a Roma final, not so much for the final element, but the Roma element. Does it's a shame it's an Italian team, and I don't mean any disrespect to Serie A, but you know, that is it's a major lead. You get Serie A teams in the other finals relatively frequently compared to other countries. It'd be really nice if that was Slavia Prague in the final, or Olympiacos or Panathinaikos or someone. The fact that they've taken it so seriously, I think, proves A, that UEFA were right, that there was space in the calendar for another tournament, and B, that there is a great big groundswell of unrequited interest in European football. That's probably the best way to put it, that there are lots of teams who've been locked out of this process as the Champions League has become ever more concentrated on a handful of teams from a handful of countries. The great drama that we started talking about earlier, that satisfies one need that we have as fans, or that teams have as institutions, or that players have as professionals, but it doesn't satisfy all of those needs. And there is space, and there should be space. Space has to be made for clubs to fulfil their ambitions and to have something to fight for. And we saw it with the Nations League, which suddenly kind of revived international football outside of qualifying processes, because it meant there was some sort of meaning on the games. And when people bought into it, it kind of improved it. It made it a bit of a spectacle. It meant that someone was top and bottom of a table, and people like that. People like tables. People like ranking stuff, just like they like booing national anthems. And they should do. They should like both of those things. But the Conference League just kind of proved that to a lot of teams in a lot of countries, what happened in the Champions League is great entertainment for the television, and it's great to watch, but it's not really related to you. It doesn't have any meaning for you. And what fans want, and fans are the most important in this, is meaning. And the competition has developed meaning extremely quickly, because people were crying out for, yearning for something that they could give their meaning to.
We all wanted Bodo Glimt in the final.
We did,
make
that's
a
true
tournament that makes that happen. God, the world will be a better place. But like the great philosopher Nas once said, life is what you make it. And Nas knows, because Nas is, I crap you not, an Everton fan. And I don't like to speak for Nas. That is actually true. Google him. But I do think that half man, half amazing himself would approve of the Conference League, and he would love watching Feyenoord and Roma duke it out on Wednesday, May 25th, a week this Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Why shoot the breeze about it when you could be about it? Once again, the Europa League final. We'll see one of Eintracht Frankfurt or the mighty Rangers crowned this Wednesday, May 18th, 3 p.m. Eastern. Both matches available live and on demand on Double P Paramount Plus. And next week we have the small matter of the Champions League to discuss. Don't miss that one, where I will try to subtly jinx a team named Liverpool Football Club. Rory, Tirana, Albania. I'm sure many of our listeners will be making the transatlantic journey for the Conference League final. When they arrive, what's your food pick in that painter's palette of a city?
Do you know what? I've been to Tirana and I really liked it. I wasn't sure at all what to expect, but I went to watch Albania play Serbia in a game in a town called Elbasan, which is about an hour south, I think, south of Tirana. It could be north or east or west. I don't really know, but it's kind of an hour and a half outside of Tirana. And I had a couple of days in Tirana, and it's a really, really nice place. And it's improved, as anywhere is, by the presence of genuine Italian gelato. So we're not having a healthy meal, Rog, in Tirana, but we are going to find some ice cream. My main culinary memory of Albania is that the ice cream and the coffee were both fantastic, which is generally a legacy of lots of Italians being there at some point.
Oh, ice cream on a Tirana spring night. Sounds like the next Bright Eyes album. One more before we go, Rory. Can we have a prediction for our two finals?
I think Roma will win the conference lead. I'm relatively confident in that. And I feel really sorry for Remco, my final friend, who will be going to Tirana. I'm sorry that his journey will end in disappointment, but I think Roma will take it. Although final do have a couple of players that I suspect we'll be hearing more of in the next couple of years. The Europa League's really hard to call. It's really hard. That will be a really interesting game. Not just of the States, but just because I think the teams are probably quite evenly matched. And because for once, there's a passion balance that Eintracht have got this far on this wave of their incredible support, but so have Rangers. And they're both playing out, you know, beyond themselves. They're both playing out their skins. I would maybe go for Rangers just, but I couldn't tell you. Penalty shootout, 15-14, game ending at about 1 o'clock local time in the morning. And Rangers just narrowly squeezing through.
God, I have that one on penalties. Europa League, I think 1-1 normal time. Rangers win the shootout. And my God, the hangovers that will grip the area up and down the River Clyde do not bear thinking about. In the Conference League, break out the tissues and the nicest bottle of Portuguese wine you can get your hands on. 1-0 to Roma. Oh, and Mourinho will make his whole team put those three fingers in the air to commemorate his achievement for the official photograph and history and posterity. Oh, can't wait to break them down with you next week. Godspeed, Rory Smith.
Looking forward to it.
And thank you for listening. That's all for today. Watch these two finals in all their glory. Revel in them. Make great memories. This was European Nights. We are presented by Paramount Plus. We'll be back next week to dive deep into the plumbing of the Champions League final, aka Mo Salah's revenge game. Courage, dear listeners. Or as they say in the Netherlands, moed! Hey Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.